This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hey, hello, everybody. Pete Caliendo here in Fukushima, Japan. We are here with Baseball Outside the Box. We are on the road. Can you believe that? In Japan, one of the most beautiful countries in the world, but also one of the hottest. But not only hot when it comes to the weather, but hot when it comes to baseball, because they are some of the best players in the world when it comes to any level. Whether you're talking women's baseball, men's baseball, they are some of the best. And we're going to talk about all this here. Welcome, everybody in the U.S. and around the world. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. We are going to have a great show for you. Currently, we will have two of our WCBF World Children's Baseball Fair coaches, instructors from around the world. We've got several. This is an event that's been going on for 29 years. This is the 29th year. Over 200 kids from all over the world. What a great opportunity for them. They get a chance to not only see the culture of this great country, but they also get a chance to mingle with players from all over the world. They live together. They get on the baseball field together. They get to learn different languages. They're being instructed by some of the best instructors in the world. And you're going to meet two of them right now. Later on, you'll meet a couple others, but you're going to meet two of them right now. One is Narelle Gastre and also Sherry Reiniger. I'm going to tell you a little bit about them in a minute, but don't forget, check me out on YouTube, Tips of the Week, and go to my Twitter, @BaseballOut. Make sure that if you can, share the show. Get it all over social media. I guarantee you that people will like it because of the fact that, you remember, this is a show that interviews some of baseball's best coaching minds from around the world who love to challenge the status quo. And that's the key, because you're seeing the game change a great deal. And when the game's changing, it can only be better if we're making the right changes. We've got some great people in the game. In one of the areas that the game's changing in, and it should have changed a long time ago, and these ladies are going to talk about it, and that's women's baseball, because I got a chance to experience it, if I remember back, maybe 7-8 years ago in Japan, which was the World Cup. And I got to tell you, you know, I was new to it, never seen it in my life, and I thought it was some fantastic baseball, some great athletes. And not only that, I did a tryout with USA Baseball in Chicago, and I got to tell you that it was so much fun, because the women's baseball, when it comes, they have a passion for the game, they love the game, and not only that, they listen more than the men do. So I know the men are going to get mad at me, but it's, in my opinion, when I worked with some of the women, it was a lot easier to instruct, because they picked the information up and they applied it a lot quicker. But again, that's my opinion, but I'm going to let the professionals tell you about it. So let me tell you a little bit about, first of all, our two guests, Narelle Gastre, with, get this, two of the best countries when it comes to, and you've heard me say this on the show, two of the best countries when it comes to coaches' education at all levels, because one, mandated by their government and extremely organized. USA Baseball, our organization and our country, has learned a lot from them, because they've had these programs for a long time. Not only Baseball Canada, but also Baseball Australia. Both federations have had outstanding coaching programs for many years. We're going to talk a little bit about that with the ladies, because both of them are involved. Now, currently, Narelle, she's been a national team coach for Team Australia, but she'll tell you a little bit about it. She's done a lot more than that. She's on the Women's Baseball Commission for the World Baseball Softball Confederation. She's been on there for a while. Both of them are on the committees where they represent the World Baseball Softball Confederation in the World Cup and also in the Pan Am Games, the Olympics, anything that's being held by the association. So again, we're talking about two very good experts. We'll give you more background as the show continues. Let me tell you, Sherry Reiniger, she is U.S. born, but was with Team Alberta on their as a coach, was born in the U.S., represents Baseball Canada. Not only that, interesting, when we were talking, I didn't know this, and I've known Sherry and Narelle for a while. Sherry was actually one, and you've heard the show because you've heard Andre Lachance on the show. We talked about the Canadian Long-Term Athletic Development Program. She was on the initial group that started that program. So we're talking about some great experience here. So first thing we're going to do, and I should have told you ahead of time, when I said the World Children's Baseball Fair has been around 29 years, the host of this great event and our chairman is Sadahara Ho, the great home run king champion, not only in Japan, but all over the world. So Mr. O is here. He's been with the kids. He's been with the coaches. Another great example of another great teacher and instructor. If you want to listen to that interview, go back to some of the shows because I interviewed Sadahara Ho last time I was here at the World Children's Baseball Fair. It was a great pleasure to do that. That was about 3 years ago. So check it out, man. And let's get ready with the show because you know we love to get to the baseball part right away and start talking about baseball development, start talking about how to grow the game. And these women have begun to grow this game worldwide, and they're going to tell you about it. So first of all, let me say hi to Narelle Gastre from Australia, and you're going to recognize the accent right away and know she's from Australia.
Hey, Pete, how you going? Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right, man. And Sherry Reiniger, I guess she's born U.S., but you know, Narelle was saying that she's got the Canadian accent, so let's listen to it.
Hey, Pete. Thanks for having me. Yeah, 29 years in Canada. That'll do it.
That'll do it too. Well, I tell you what, both of you, first of all, let's do this. Both of you have been with the World Children's Baseball Fair. Actually, Sherry Reiniger's a rookie when it comes to the World Children's Baseball Fair, but she's a rookie because it's her first time here, but she's definitely not a rookie when it comes to coaching here because she's taken the bull by the horns here and gone right into the instructions, first class all the way. Both of the ladies have. Narelle has been here. How many years have you been here now?
This is my fifth year.
Fifth year, so you got more than I do, so more experience than I do. And I think this might have been my fourth. So let's do this. Let's tell, give us a little idea. We'll start with Sherry. Give us an idea about the World Children's Baseball Fair. Since it's your first time, what are your thoughts of it? What'd you think about it?
Right. First off, I was ecstatic to be selected by the WBSC to come and instruct this year and to see all these kids from around the world. And to also see, now that we're talking about women's baseball, to see the number of girls that are being representing their countries here, I'm sure that's been a change. Narelle can probably speak to. But what a great event. Today I had Argentina, France, kids from Ghana, with Japanese kids. So we get to work with kids from a diverse background. Some have played quite a bit of baseball. Some are just really getting started. But to be able to grow the game and also grow those friendships, some of our best relationships are through this great game. So that's excited to be here.
All right, folks, you've heard my voice on the radio before. You're probably thinking, what's wrong with it? Well, what's wrong with it is that we're outdoors. It's about 104 for a lot of U.S. People, 104 probably out here. It's very hot, but there's a lot of talking that's going on, so we got a little groggy voice. We apologize. Narelle, I'll tell you what, this is your fifth year. What brings you back all the time?
My love for the kids and the amazing organization and the opportunities that these kids from around the world get. So the WCBF brings together 150, 200 children from around the world, puts them up in dormitory style, gives them the experience on the ground. And I'm still friends with some of the kids from previous years. There was a Japanese boy came out yesterday and traveled 4 hours to get here to say hello because he had so much fun last year. There's a couple of girls in Australia that every time I see them, they always talk about when we, when we were together with them 4 years ago. I was actually, this is my fifth year as a coach, but in 2008, I think it was, I came along as one of the coaches of one of the friendship teams. We had a whole series of Australian girls here and we played friendly games against the local Japanese teams. So I love the fact that the WCBF is giving those girls the chance and is giving me the opportunity every year to come back and be a part of it. It makes me proud, it makes me humble, and I just keep hoping that I get asked back again.
Yeah, and what's cool about the program too is, these kids, they learn a lot about the game, obviously, when they go station to station. But also, some of their coaches are here, so their coaches are learning at the same time. Is that something? What have you heard from the coaches that you've had at each station? Well, you know, like any, what's been their input a little bit, or their expectations?
Well, I would say that a lot of them are hungry, especially the countries from like Ghana and Laos, where they're just starting baseball. They're looking for drills and skills, and they're looking for information. How can they take back those skills to their kids? So, and then countries like Argentina, they have one of their directors from Baseball Argentina here as their chaperone. So he's able to jump in and assist, but he's picking up new language or new techniques or new little tips, and they're just excited to be able to see that some of what they're doing or have learned is kind of on par with what we're doing at the world level.
Hey folks, we're gonna have both of these ladies, their Twitter on the show notes, but I'm gonna give it to you right now. It's Sherry's is at Fuel2, the number 2 win. And then Narelle is, she's got a real short one, which is really good. It's G-O-S-S-Y, Gossy. So that check them out on Twitter, because they got some great stuff on Twitter, not only about the CBF, but also some other things about the game of baseball. All right, you've been working at stations. This is kind of unique. I'd like to know a little bit about what you're doing at each station, let our coaches around the world know what you're doing, and what are the main things you're teaching in that particular skill. Now, just so you know, everybody, this is just day 2. So yesterday was an intro. We did some drills. We did some, but today was really the first day of the camps. So let's start with Sherry. What have you been working on at your station? Why it's so important what you're teaching?
Well, Pete, I have the throwing station. So pretty important that we get some of those keys to those kids, starting from a four-seam grip and just learning how to use the wrist. So I love teaching throwing. I love to teach throwing progression, and starting from ball out front and just getting that follow through to getting the elbow pointed. So we did some things today. So they point and they look at the peace sign on their finger, see it on the back of their on their hand. They should see that and not the ball to throw. So it's giving them some cues that they can take back that are easy for them to remember. So we start on a knee, and then we work our way up to our feet, and then we work our way back. We start to add the step to the ball with the footwork involved, all the way to long toss. So it was really great, because it's, for me, this is something that our kids, when I was coaching years ago, this is something we did every day. It was how we started a practice after a general warm-up. So it's something that they can use, and it makes them a better player, pitcher, no matter whether they're infielder, outfielder, catcher, or pitcher. It's going to help them to be better throwers. And we know that's how you get the outs.
If you had to identify something that is very common that most of them do wrong that they need to correct, what would be one or two of those things?
I would say number one, grip. Most kids didn't understand how to grip a baseball. But the other thing is just getting that hand up, getting that elbow up, and having good good technique through the throw and the follow through. A lot of kids stop their arm.
A lot of these kids have different levels too. How'd you address that within? Because I know a lot of coaches around the world are going to wonder. They all run in a situation. I've got 12 kids. 3 can play catch. Not so. Another 3 can really good. How do you deal with that as far as who's playing catch with who, or if they're struggling with it?
Well, we're lucky to have some assistant coaches, but also chaperones with the team. So they set up the partnerships, the partners who they're throwing with, to make sure that they were throwing with somebody not as, at the same level. But I have assistant coaches, which is great, from the university. They're university baseball kids from Japan that we all get to work with. And so when we see a kid that was really struggling or just brand new, we actually put that assistant coach with that kid to work with them more directly. And then the chaperones that had some baseball experience as well, kind of were spent more time. So, we just try and progress the kids that have the experience. We try and get them to the next progression a little quicker.
Yeah, and what's neat is that these Japanese university kids, they're taught by, obviously, they're very good. So because they do it so well, they also can teach it a little bit.
That's right.
Now, did the other thing we do is, you know, Kenko's a sponsor here, and Kenko balls are the softer baseballs, is, you know, reduce fear ball. How much does that help? Because, you know, coaches, should they be using those, and when should they be using it with kids?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, this is U11, right? So this is, kids are 10 or 11 years old, and probably anybody new to the game should be using that this baseball. It took the fear away from the kids that haven't played a lot. Some of these kids, you know, even if they can throw, some of them don't receive very well. And, you know, there was one kid that took a ball off a face today. So we didn't have an injury, so that was great.
That could also mean not only an injury, it could mean quitting a game.
Yeah, because lack of confidence.
It's not a lot of fun to get hit, and that's what the safety ball can really help with that.
Yeah, so I think it's great for kids when they're first getting in. I know our kids in Canada that were playing more competitively played with a real baseball from the time they were probably 9 years old, 10 years old. But I think anybody new to the game starts there, and once they have can really be confident in receiving and throwing, then start moving back to a real baseball.
How much has it helped on the receiving factor, where they can concentrate more on the technique because they know there's not a ball coming that's hard?
Well, they go for it, right? Okay. So they don't shy. And we had four stations today. I didn't see one child, one athlete, young athlete, shy away from the baseball.
Yeah.
You know, and I've coached, you know, other sports, both in fastball and baseball. And, you know, when there's a kid that is really worried about catching a ball because somebody throws hard at them, usually they're turning their back, they're shying away, which leads to more injuries a lot of times. So this is just, you know, it's the first time I've worked with a Kenko ball.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fabulous. A little different because you don't really have the true seams,
right?
But their hands are so small at that age as well. It's perfect for them.
Yeah. What do you tell them? Then we're going to get on Norrell. I want to find out what you're working at your station, but what do you tell them if they're having a tough time gripping the ball? Some kids, you know, their fingers are smaller. Some, you know, can do it. Some can't. Is there any other options you have?
Well, I think with this ball, it seems to be pretty easy because it's also not heavy. It's not a heavy ball. It's a very light ball as well. So, you know, I really didn't run into that. I mean, they're 10 and 11.
Sure.
I guess if they were 5 and 6, that might be a little factor.
All right, Narelle, what are we going to worry? Hey, folks. I mumble a little bit because, you know, we get up at 3:30 in the morning, and we're up till about, you know, 6:30. Then we have breakfast, so we really don't get a whole lot of sleep. So, you know, I apologize if once in a while I forget my words. But let's talk about a little bit about what you're doing at your station.
Yeah, so I've been working on the bunt station, teaching the kids. It's interesting trying to teach Japanese kids how to bunt, and they already know how to bunt.
Yeah, I've been in that experience before, but go ahead. I understand.
But essentially just bring them all together. Very few of the kids outside Japan have really done a lot of bunting, so I really break it down very, very, you know, all the way down to the basics. So I get them to hold the bat with one hand. I get them to give me a thumbs up with their other hand, and then, you know, use that to rest the bat on the bat on their thumb to do that. And we break it down. We incorporate a bit of a fun into it as well, because I get them to start with the bat at the top of the zone, so that they know that they never lift the bat, because if they have to lift the bat, the pitch is a ball.
Yeah.
And then I make sure that they're bending their knees to get down rather than dropping the bat head. And it's fun trying to work with the different countries like that, because I'll start with talking to them like, we're holding it, you know, we're starting at the top and then the bottom, and we talk top, bottom, top, bottom. Then I bring in, you know, all the other countries and ask the chaperones. So I've worked out that Japan, the top means ue and bottom is shita. So we top, bottom, ue, shita. And then today I got France in there and Switzerland and Ghana, and asking them what their top and bottom was. So the kids are all coming up and going down with their different countries. So that gets them all like having a little bit of fun with that. And then we just break into stations, and I keep the countries together for that. Sometimes I split them up, and sometimes I don't. But with bunting, it's really important that they're able to hear what they're being told in their own language. So, that's just the way that I do that. And first off, you know, they often, you know, they're not hitting the ball, or they're actually trying to swing the bat, mm-hmm. or all sorts of things. But I'm pretty confident that by the end of it, they know what they're doing. And today when we did it, you know, the first thing somebody said when we said we were going to have a game was like, okay, can we bunt? And I'm, yeah, sure. That's why we taught you. That's why we taught you to bunt. So a couple of the girls shaped round to bunt, but then sort of pulled out, had a little giggle. And I'm like, you can do this, you know. But then they swung the bat and hit a double. So that's all good too.
And bunting is a game that really, you know, it's been lacking a lot in sports. You don't see it a lot in the major leagues, and you don't see it a lot right now in baseball in general. You know, fear's got something to do with that too when it comes to, I mean, you had to deal with young kids who, you know, they see the ball coming and they've got to try to bunt it. That's got to be fearful. The ball's had to help there a little bit.
Yeah, but again, because we're using the Kenko balls, you know, there is not that fear. And we had a couple of girls that got hit today, and they were fine with it. They, again, just had a little laugh and got back into it. And for all the kids, you know, some of them, they're starting out and they cannot make contact with that ball. So really work hard in showing them exactly where on the bat that you want the ball to make contact, and to get their, you know, their head down over the ball, and really watch it all the way. Because I think that's, you know, that's the thing for hitting as well for me. But I think we really don't watch the ball as much as we think we do. Mm-hmm. And it's when you really watch it that's when you start making contact. So.
Well, you know, it's interesting you brought that up, because we talked about it on the show probably 6 times already, where I go on Twitter a lot and I see a lot of baseball experts, very good experts, talk about hitting all the time, but yet I don't hear a lot about vision. Mm-hmm. They talk about everything else, but they don't talk about the vision aspect, which I can't believe, because not only hitting, but how are you going to do any skill if you can't see?
You can't see.
You can't hit if you can't see.
Exactly. And, you know, and I think we assume that's a skill that you just do naturally, because, you know, you're supposed to see whatever you do, right? Mm. But again, how do you do that?
Yeah.
What's a tip that you might, whether it's bunting or any other skill, but I mean, I'll ask you both, you both answer this one. What's a tip that you use maybe sometimes to help them see what they're doing?
Yeah. So sometimes, particularly away from bunting, but just in hitting, as soon as you see them lift their head and they swing and they're looking up at the sky, you actually get them to do it again and get them to stop and freeze at that point and say, what are you looking at right now? And then they're looking up the sky. You're like, well, how can you see the ball if you're looking at the sky? And they're, oh, yeah, okay, that's kind of cool. So I'll often over-exaggerate with the going shoulder to shoulder. So have them start with their head on their chin on their left shoulder, and then through onto their right shoulder. Mm-hmm. You know, some later on, you don't want them necessarily doing it quite like that. But I'm a big proponent for over-exaggeration early on, just to get the understanding and the feel, and then you refine it and then improve it from there.
Yeah, and another interesting comment, I'm going to let you answer, Sherry. But you know, when you say, and I like that, because you today in today's. And we're not here to talk hitting, but in today's era of launch angle, you know, a lot of instructors out there don't, you know, yeah, they're working with major league players. I get the launch angle. You guys understand launch angle. But when you got an 8-year-old, a 10-year-old with a heavy bat, who already has a great uppercut, you know, if you exaggerate the swing down, well, they're not going to swing down. They're going to swing level, because you're actually balancing it for them, because they're trying to swing down, but since they're swinging so far up, they're going to make it somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
That's what you're talking about, the same factor. So that's why I hope, then we talk about it on the show, that's why I hope coaches understand that. We want kids to hit line drives, right? That's the goal, try to hit a line drive. But when you got somebody who's just constantly swinging way under the bat, and they don't have the technology possibly, you know, of the Rapsodos or all this great technology out there, you know, you got to be able to use some terminology to teach the kids to do something a little bit different. Like you said, exaggerate it,
yeah.
It comes back a little bit. What about, I'm sorry, Sherry, I wanted you to answer also on the vision aspect.
Yeah, well, it was just funny thing. I had a vision and vacate drill yesterday.
Oh, cool.
So when we did our overall, the first day, we have one group of kids and we just do some very basic elements of receiving, throwing, hitting, and then they play a little bit of a game. But so one of the drills in hitting that I did yesterday in one of the stations I ran was a just vision and vacate. So watching it all the way to the glove behind them, you know, from the pitcher, mm-hmm. whoever was tossing it, just watching it go past, tracking.
Sure.
Because if you can't, I'm with you. If you can't, vision is huge. If you can't see a pitch, you can't hit it.
Yeah.
And or you're not going to do it. You know, you're not going to be able to repeat it. But then teaching kids how to get out of the way of a baseball. right? And being able to do it with these soft balls is fabulous. Now, when we've done it with other kids, we'll usually start with tennis balls, you know, and then we might do it with a real baseball, but put them behind the backstop. So they've got some netting, you know, behind them. So they're seeing it and learning how to get out of the way. My husband, when he played college baseball, they did it with real baseballs.
Yes,
you know,
yes, right? I've heard some horror stories about that.
That was back, you know, yeah, back in the back
I've
in
heard,
the 80s.
Heard,
you know,
they line up the machine at pretty high speeds and yeah, they get drilled. I'm not sure I wanted to be part of that program.
No, but you know, so yesterday we did that with the kids, and at least we give them a way to get out. Mm. And I think those things are really important. Because not every kid's going to be able to hit every pitch. And as these kids start facing pitchers, mm-hmm. real pitchers, we know at the younger ages, they don't have a great command of the strike zone as
Absolutely.
Well as pitchers.
Yeah.
So I think that was, again, having those softballs for kids. And if you're in the U.S. and you don't have the Kenko ball, you know, tennis balls are a great tool as well.
Absolutely. And we're talking about reducing fear. These are great techniques for being able to reduce the fear so kids can actually accomplish the skill a little bit and have some fun. Because once you can accomplish the skill, I think that's when the game becomes a lot more fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say just one funny thing is teaching bunting, as I said earlier, to some of the Japanese children who are actually learning, they wrap their hand around the barrel,
mm-hmm.
and it's just how they do it.
Yeah.
And so a couple of times, and I've done bunting a few times at WCBF, and the first time I did it, I was like, okay, nope, you're not doing it like that. And then I realized, I'm like, wait, okay, no. This is how they get taught, and that's just the difference from sort of East versus West or mm-hmm. Different style. And you know they're the bunting experts, so I kind of laugh a little bit because I'm teaching them our kind of safety first version of bunting,
sure.
but it's not necessarily the best way to bunt. But you know, we're, as I said, we've got 10 and 11 year olds, so we do it very basic. And you know, sometimes I do things and I say things that I'm like, yeah, I wouldn't be teaching an older kid how to do it like this, mm-hmm. but I have to say it like this so you're safe and so you make contact with the ball. And you know, at those age, that's what's important.
You know, and I remember coming to Japan, working with a collegiate all-star team, and they said to me, so I can relate to this, they said, I want you to go work with the infielders, you know, and try to help them out. So I went to work with the infielders, and I told them, you know what, you guys are doing great, I can't do a thing for you. Because again, some of the best in the world.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to change how they were going to do things, because they were just doing them really, really well.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I learned a lot from them just from watching them. Okay, I want to jump into this part, because I think this is extremely important, and I want you to understand a lot of this. You know, we're going to talk about women's baseball worldwide, but first of all, you know, I've watched television, and I'm not going to mention any names, but I've heard things, you know, once in a while, and I get mad at it because I've watched women's baseball and women's softball, and you know, you've heard terms in the past, you know, where guys will say, you know, they throw like a girl.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I'd like to get a couple of these girls out there and let them hit against them.
Yeah.
You know, that if it upsets me, it's going to upset also the women in the game. This has really changed because, you know, the game's developing and we've got some tremendous athletes that are in the game now and we're seeing them. So how did you deal with that when you heard those kind of things? In certain situations,
yeah.
You know, maybe women came to you and said, you know, somebody told them, you know, that they don't throw well.
Yeah.
How did you deal with the mental aspect of that?
Well, I still deal with it today.
Yeah.
And it was only recently somebody said to me, you know, someone said about someone, oh, you know, there was a guy and said, oh, you throw like a girl. And I just turn around and go, you know what? He throws like somebody who's never been taught to throw.
Yeah.
And that's the difference,
yeah.
right? Girls from a young age, particularly around baseball and softball, they're not taught to throw. They don't get as many opportunities to throw. They're not out there developing their technique, their arm strength, and all of those things. And so when someone says you throw like a girl, well, actually it's not, because you throw like somebody who hasn't been taught like a girl. There's a great promotional thing about like a girl, and you ask adults, you know, what does it look like to throw like a girl, and they've, you know, they're all over the place, they're throwing with the same leg as the arm they're throwing. They ask what it looks like to run like a girl, and they're, you know, got hands going everywhere and legs going everywhere. And you ask, you know, young kids, 6 and 7 year old boys and girls, what it looks like to throw like a girl or run like a girl. And they run and they throw and they're dynamic and they're strong. And it's something that we just have grown up with. And we still perpetuate this myth that, you know, girls can't be as athletic as boys, but we're starting to see such amazing athletes come through. And the reason that they're coming through and they're good is women can be athletic. They just need the opportunities, and they've never had the opportunities before. So,
and I think the myth is the right word, because yeah, you know, it is a myth. I mean, I'm sure you've gone through it.
Oh, absolutely.
And just so you know, our audience, you know, that none of these what we're talking about, there's no, we have no questions here. They don't know of any questions we're going to ask. You know, we're just going to throw questions at them, and they're just going to give you some honesty. And then this is something that, you know, I brought it up simply because I've heard it, but I've also seen it on television. I mean, I got a clip of a pretty famous person saying it on television. And, you know, and to me, he should have been stopped right there, you know, by the network. Mm. You know, not in just saying that, because it's wrong. And, you know, forget the bad part, but it's just wrong, because it doesn't make any sense. Because, you know, I've dealt with athletes at all ages, all levels, different, you know, whether it's women or boys, and I've seen guys that can't throw that well. Because mm-hmm. why? Some guys don't have the opportunity to play that much either.
Yeah.
I mean, some inner city kids don't get a chance. Other kids in other countries don't get chances to play that much. They play once a week, so they don't throw that well either. Mm-hmm. So the examples are the same. So, absolutely. I mean, I'm sure you've dealt with it, Sherry. So, how have you dealt with this situation when it's come up?
Well, I remember being somebody saying something like that in high school, and a friend of mine and I both ended up playing college fastball, and we said, no, we throw like athletes.
Yeah.
You know, so I think number one, athleticism is a piece of it, and we can talk athlete development,
sure.
Right? And not everybody is built necessarily to be an athlete, but a lot of people aren't given the skills and the training and the coaching to right. become an athlete. So, but
and at the right age, right?
And at the right ages for development. Yeah, those windows of opportunity are pretty important for some of those things.
And mention that, because windows of opportunity is important. When are those windows of opportunity that?
Well, we know from 9 to 12 is a major skill set development age. And if kids don't get...
That's for any athlete.
That's for any athlete. For many sports, but especially baseball that has so many specific... You know, baseball's not an easy game.
Right.
Like, technically, it's not an easy game. So some of those things really have to be developed from 9 to 12, some of those basic techniques, and then they can get refined. But that's the window where their motor skills, that motor skill development really happens. Some of the basic athlete development, though, is before that. So, you know, if kids aren't running and skipping and jumping and rolling and you know, going up ropes when they're younger, like in that 5 to 9 age, then they're not going to maximize their athlete development later mm-hmm. as athletes either, right? So there's windows of opportunity for speed. So, you know, everything has its piece. And the really cool thing being on the long-term athlete development committee for Baseball Canada with some of the top baseball people in the country, it was really looking at the sports science.
People, yeah,
well, we had the top sports science people in the world,
right.
Ishan Balye, who actually, you know, did a lot of work in Australia so Australia was first with really the LTAD drive, getting ready for their Olympics, right? So Canada just said, why aren't we doing this? Mm. Which was fabulous. But so we were able to lay it out in our LTAD program, and so that coaches could see and program directors could see when those pieces really need to hit. But you know, one of the things that Baseball Canada did a few years ago is they came up with a campaign. It was basically, well, I hope you throw like a girl.
Uh-huh.
Right? So they turned it. So it's like, sure. Hey, we've got some girls that throw pretty well here. We've got some girls that throw out of the outfield and, you know, throw a dime, you know, on a dime to the plate.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they've taken it. Sometimes we have to twist it and say, okay, yeah, you don't know, so let's show you.
That's right.
Who throws like a girl. Yeah.
You gotta love that. Yeah. Not only, matter of fact, Australian Baseball Federation, as Sherry mentioned, you guys have had the long-term development program for a long time. Give us a little background just on what it's done for Australian baseball. We know it's in all sports, but yep. A little bit about baseball.
Yeah, so I got first exposed to it probably about 6 or 8 years ago in a camp that we had for our women's Australian team. And for the first time, we were doing a lot of those activities where we were trying to make sure that people were mastering the basics of LTAD. So, you know, being able to do one-legged squats and two-legged squats, and before they went on to their next levels. So we had a coach development program back then that was developed by a guy who had really good experience with LTAD. I can't remember the name of the guy Shari said, but he was that guy. He worked, you know, he worked in there with him, and he developed as part of our coaching accreditation. It included that involvement of the LTAD, and I think that's, you know, now the rest of the sport is starting to come on board with that. Soccer at the time had been doing it really well in Australia as well, and we took a lot from the way the soccer did their warm-ups and their dynamic warm-ups and that sort of thing. Or I should call it football, because we're talking to the international stage, right? But I'm from Australia, so football is Aussie rules. But we've seen those from that period, and you can see the athletes that have been working in that space and doing that athlete development as opposed to baseball development. They become better baseballers. And I also work, in my day job is in or out sport and recreation, and we're seeing more and more of that. You know, the early specialization is actually detrimental to greater development further on, and that that development of the skills and the motor skills and the fundamentals, they're what actually ends up making good athletes, baseball or anything else.
Well, I'm thrilled that you brought that up, because we more and more we keep talking about, you know, specialization in baseball by staying away from, let kids play other sports when they're young. So I'm glad, you know, from two experts from two great baseball countries and organizations, I'm so thrilled that you brought that up. Now, you both have worked with a lot of different athletes, men and women, okay? Earlier on the show, you heard me say that the little time that I have worked with women in baseball, I felt that they just learned a lot faster. I mean, am I wrong in that, or are there other areas too that you see that you know, women we can learn from as far as their development? You know,
I would strongly agree. When I coached, especially at the U13 level, and I coached boys and girls at that time, the Team Alberta, and then was working with my son's travel team, who are highly skilled kids, good athletes, but the girls pick stuff up way faster, right? And I think when we get into baseball and you see girls that are playing the game, they're hungry. So they may not, you know, in their hometown, they may not get a lot of good coaching. So when they have the access to that good coaching, they are hungry for that information. And you know what? Girls sometimes are a little more pleasers than boys are, right? Mm-hmm. So just by nature, and they want to make that coach proud of them, right? So I think there's a little bit of that intrinsic motivation that they've got as
Absolutely.
Well. They want to do well for themselves, but it's not just about them. It's really, you know, sometimes it's about, you know, I want that coach to realize that, you know, I've done what they've asked me to do.
Sure.
So, but I've definitely seen that, yeah, the women are number one hungry, and they think it, right? They're always thinking, how can I get better?
Yeah. And the other thing, because I'll make two points around here, the girls that I've seen in any country that I've coached in, they've never had the opportunities before. So a lot of the boys that grow up in the baseball system, they just, this is what they expect. They get good coaching, that they get training, and their opportunities are there. That the girls, you know, a lot of the girls that have played on the national teams over the years, they've just been good athletes that have picked up baseball, learned to love it, and they just happen to be good at it. And they've never had that opportunity to be taught. So when they are getting good coaching, or anybody paying any attention to them, they're grateful. So they don't want to also, I'm not sure I can use this word, they don't want to screw it up.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they don't listen and they don't take what they can get every time they can, they might not get another opportunity. Whereas the boys are kind of like, oh yeah, you know, we'll have this guy come down and we'll have that guy come down. So that's what I see a lot in Australia. In other countries, it's very much, they're just grateful, boys and girls. In the underdeveloped countries, because
sure.
I just spent some time in India early this year, and I went down and helped some of the, you know, the local guys there that are trying to get baseball started in India, and everybody was grateful because they just didn't have the opportunities. So I think that's one of the big things for the women, and also about seeing about developing the game everywhere, is it, you know, that sense of entitlement for those that always get it, and then they don't end up appreciating, and they don't necessarily work as hard because they just don't understand how lucky they are. Whereas these people, whether it's in underdeveloped countries or the girls, they understand how lucky they are every time they get that opportunity, and they take it.
Absolutely. And why did you guys decide to play baseball? What made you, when you first started, why baseball?
Well, Pete, I didn't have the opportunity to play baseball, right? I grew up in the 70s and 80s in California, and there was no such thing. Mm-hmm. But I was around the game the whole time, and I remember being 5-6 years old and going to watch the American Legion team, local team play. And one of the kids was a shortstop. He was my dad's buddy's kid, and he ended up going on to play AAA baseball. And I just loved watching him play the game, right? So I played through college fastball, and then I met a Canadian when I was down in college baseball player, ended up getting married on a baseball field in Canada. And because he was involved, actually my first exposure to being involved with baseball is he and I took on a U13 community league team, and we coached together.
Cool.
Yeah, we coached together, and it's like, I can do this.
Yeah.
Like I love this game. I love to be around it. I love the skill set. There's some things I love about it way more than the game of softball. So, that's kind of where it's like, wait a second, maybe there is a place. And then the girls' baseball started to come along. So, unlike, some of the other people here, that I didn't get that chance.
And we're also going to get into the opportunities that now women have in the game that probably they should have had a lot earlier. You started playing, was there something that grabbed your attention?
Well, I have a few touch points, because growing up in Australia, cricket was a big sport, and my dad and my brothers both played cricket. Girls didn't play cricket back there then, but I got to play backyard cricket with my family. And for those of you who don't know, in cricket you kind of bowl with a bent arm, so and it's an overarm action, and it's a little bit different to how you throw a baseball. And if you don't have good arm strength, it's kind of hard to get
that through.
It
looks like the arm's a little bit straighter.
Yeah. Yeah,
straight
yeah,
up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like it's really hard to throw, but they can throw.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was playing with my older brothers in the backyard, and I couldn't throw as hard as them or bowl as hard as them. So, and I was very competitive at a young age. I still am, I guess. So they actually let me just stand at the crease, which is the end of where the wicket, and I'm using all these cricket terms. They used to let me stand there and throw like a full toss straight at the other end, the three sets of sticks that form the stumps, and which is about where a baseball strike zone is. And so I just used to stand there and throw it as hard as I could and just to try to get them out. And it wasn't until much later, I played a few years of softball, but it wasn't until much later, I was nearly 25 when I started playing the game. But they came in, they said, well, can you pitch? And I'm like, no, I don't know how to pitch. And then they got me to stand on the plate, and I threw the ball, and they went, you can pitch. And I'm like, oh, okay, so that's pitching. But my love for the game came from Ozzie Smith, St. Louis Cardinals Hall of Famer. We got our only exposure in country Victoria in Australia to baseball was half an hour of This Week in Baseball, TWIB, every Saturday. Mm-hmm. And that was all I ever saw. And I would, I would live for watching that on every Saturday. And I saw Ozzie Smith roll a double play and jump over the runner when he did it. And I just went, oh, my God, I want to do that one day. I never did, still haven't done it. Maybe I still have a chance, but that's what got me going, and I fell in love with it from there.
Pretty cool. How about cricket? Cricket's pretty neat. Can can we learn something from cricket? Can it, as far as baseball is concerned?
It's really interesting, because cricket's learned a lot from baseball. In Australia, there was an American baseballer called Mike Young,
Mike Young. I know Mike very well.
Okay, yeah. So he was actually a cricket coach after a while,
yes.
And he introduced the catching and throwing with a baseball on the cricket field, and Rawlings a few years ago actually brought out a cricket glove, a cricket practice glove. I looked at it and went, that's a baseball glove, but apparently it's a cricket practice glove. So I think baseball has learnt cricket has learnt a lot from baseball. I think probably what baseball can learn from cricket, and we're starting to see it, and there's a lot of controversy around it, what should be changed, is that cricket have gone from playing a five-day game where they may end up in a draw and not even get a result, They've brought it back, and they now have this, you know, very fun, punchy, what they call a 2020 game that lasts a couple of hours. There's lots of what they call sixes, which are the equivalent to a home run. Mm-hmm. Lots of sixes being hit. It's really fast. You're in and out, and it's bringing the crowds back. So, you know, we know baseball's trying to, you know, change that entertainment factor, and it's about getting that right. You know, it's not about necessarily doing crazy things to make people, we jokingly talked, right, about bringing a pitcher in from the fans, or mm-hmm. or giving the fans the opportunity to choose who the next pitcher. It's not about being gimmicky about it, but it's about changing things that actually make the game faster and more interesting, and in our society today, where people don't have as much time, is, you know, get them back in and loving the game.
So. I want to ask you both this, because I'm sure I'm going to get emails from our audience. Our audience is from the U.S. and around the world, and we really appreciate when you email us, no matter what, whether it's a question about something we're talking about, or whether it's something you disagree with, and that way we can discuss it. And maybe convince you through science or something else that this might be a better way to do it. And you've heard me talk, you know, about women, and you know how I said that, you know, they can play the game, and to our audience, it may sound like I'm favoring women because there's two women sitting here, but women do things wrong also, and that's what I want to talk about. Some of the things that they struggle in the game with, that you think are things that they need to work on more, and maybe how they can start working on those things to get better. Because, you know, we've talked about how they're doing things really good, but now let's talk about what the struggles that women have in the game.
Well, you
when
know,
it comes to the tech, you know, to the game, is actually playing the game.
Yeah, and you know, really, it comes down to women don't play at the competitive level enough.
Yeah,
they don't get enough reps. And so we've seen it. I've been lucky to have been a technical commissioner since 2004 at the very first Women's World Cup, where there were a lot of softball players being transitioned to baseball players. Mm. There were only five teams. It was a short tournament, but they were athletes. But you know, the softball players didn't know how to hit a curveball, and but we still had a few balls go off the AAA park fence off the wall that tournament in Edmonton. Mm-hmm. You know, the Edmonton Trappers were there for years, and that's a pretty big park, and so we had some pretty solid hits, but definitely seeing the ball, arm strength, we see the pitching speed is not at the same level, right? Pitchers don't throw the velocity on the downside. On the upside, they tend to be really great with spin, so they spin the ball, they tend to throw off speed, move a lot of really good movement, and have good commands. So, you know, for every negative, there's a positive. I've seen a lot of development over the years, for sure, in the last 15 years. Double plays, diving plays, girls, women getting stronger. We're getting better athletes on the field. I think one of the biggest things is coaching.
Yeah, and from a young age. So again, we already covered this off a little bit, but getting those girls participating at a young age so that we have a bigger base to choose from. Japan's a really good example. They have girls' baseball leagues and rubber ball leagues, you know, all over the place, and they've got just a massive base of players to choose from. So then when they get to the pointy end and they're selecting their national team, they've got some really, really good athletes. So for some of the other countries who are either fairly new to the game, whether it's as a baseball country or as a women's baseball country, they don't have a lot of athletes to choose from. So, the goal now is to get women's baseball and girls' baseball out at the younger level so that they come up through the ranks, they get coached well through the ranks, and then when they get to the age that they can be into the elite level, then we've got real athletes to choose from.
And for our new listeners, welcome to Baseball Outside the Box. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. We are here in Fukushima, Japan. By the way, you know, I should have mentioned it at the onset of the show, Fukushima 2020 will be the Olympics here for baseball and softball. This city is getting prepared for it. Matter of fact, here at the World Children's Baseball Fair, the governor, the mayor, a lot of city officials, along with the home run champion Sadahara Ho, was here and still are here. They're promoting, this place is going to be packed. It's probably already sold out. But you know, as you know, baseball's back in the Olympics because of, and the World Baseball Softball Confederation, the governing body of the sport, has done a tremendous job of promoting the game worldwide. And one of the things they've done, I think they've taken a leadership, and it may be because of you guys being on the committee, also being with the world with the technical commission. They've taken, they've done a good job of promoting the women's baseball. Tell us about what some of the things you guys have been doing to, get the word out, because I know it's not easy, but it's not easy also for baseball, because we've got, and on our end of it, when it comes to baseball, when it comes to, you've got, as you said earlier, there's a reduction also of the, players that are playing at all levels. And we've got to fight it. Europe has to fight it because, there's a lot of soccer players, right? They're football players. Well, you got to try to get kids that are playing football or soccer to try to play baseball, and soccer's their sport. So we're all fighting it. But with women's baseball, you really want to get numbers because, like you said, there's not enough right now. And the more you have, the better it is. Yeah. So what are some of the things you're trying to do to attract the women to play the game?
Probably should give credit to the World Baseball Softball Confederation, because from, back in 2004 when they had the first Women's World Cup up through now, a few years ago they made a really big decision to really push women's baseball and to actually present World Baseball Softball Confederation as an organization that is for both men and women. With baseball or softball, you can play whichever sport you like. So we've seen a lot of really good support in that level from the administration. We're seeing being invited along to, being embraced, I guess, as technical commissioners, as coaches, as scorers, as umpires. WBSC is doing all of that and really, pushing, embracing and supporting women to get better and being more involved. So I think that's a really big thing. We've seen the same thing in Baseball Australia very specifically. A new regime of senior management comes in, and all of a sudden the girls are getting the things that they deserve, and the support from the federation, and we're seeing lots more of that. So we're seeing that specifically in there, but we're also seeing like lots of new tournaments coming in.
Absolutely, and production. I mean, last year at the Women's World Cup, we had a professional production team. Mm. So we had nine cameras going, and the amount of production, and every game was live streamed, around the world,
to showcase it.
Now people are starting to see it, and they see that sure. Women actually do play baseball, and so that then opens people's eyes to say, oh well, maybe we can eventually have a team that gets to that World Cup level, and then start to work within their own country. So I've seen that from the administrative and the promotion side, as you said, the marketing but the production and actually live streaming those games. I mean, and our announcers, our play-by-play guys are high class guys.
Absolutely.
One guy works for minor league baseball.
Absolutely.
So they're bringing in top level people to showcase the women's game, just like the men's game, which is pretty fabulous.
Now they see it, but you still got to get them to play it. So what are some advice you can give? Because we got countries, a lot of countries that listen to the show, in our own country too, in the U.S. How can you get them to play it? So you got to go out and show them the game. Still, they see it on TV, okay, and that's good. But now they got to actually do it. Is there a way to attract them now and get them to come to play? Are there ways to do that?
Well, I think the USA is actually, even though they don't have a great structure, one of the things they're starting to do really well is the role modeling. So really putting it out there, Team USA is really pushing now all the veterans who have maybe just retired or still playing, or even they're all, the original All-American Girls Professional Baseball mm-hmm. League. So they're doing a lot of role modeling around that, and girls seeing other girls or girls seeing women playing the sport is a big factor for getting their interest, because if they see a woman or a girl playing, they say, well, actually I can do that. A lot of the girls that are playing now aren't doing it because they've seen other girls and women playing. They've done it because they go, I love the sport, I'm going to do it regardless of whether anyone says I can or not. But not every girl is going to do that. So you need to create that environment and that role modeling, and I think that's a really big factor.
We're also seeing MLB and USA Baseball working together on like Trailblazer Series, mm-hmm. right? So there's more events and opportunities, and they're bringing in great coaches. the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. Like, they actually just hosted a first ever girls camp down in my Atlanta Braves spring training facility. So, you know, that exposure and awareness is great. The next thing that really needs to happen, Pete, is a system for those girls to play in and through, because most girls are still playing on boys' teams and rarely get an opportunity to play with other girls, which may also, you know, a few of those, actually one girl just is going to play college baseball in Georgia. That came out a couple of weeks ago. But most of those, you know, a lot of girls don't get the chance to play key positions. And then when they don't develop the confidence and they don't have the, you know, but you can put them together. Actually, my brother-in-law is coaching a Team Alberta girls team. He's gone, instead of coaching his boys, he's now coaching the girls at a nationals, and they actually brought them together. So they play on their boys teams, but they brought them together for two tournaments in the summer so they could play together and coach them. And he said it was incredible how timid, you know, and unsure they were the first game of a tournament, and then they mercied everybody the rest of the tournament playing against the boys. Because once they realized, hey, wait a second, I can do this, I have the confidence, and they were given the confidence and opportunity, they pulled it together. So, you know, having a system and a place for the girls to play, one of the things that we see in Japan, which is fabulous, is they have baseball at all levels for women. So they have high school teams, they have college teams, and they have a women's professional baseball league.
Sure.
And it's a small league, and, you know, obviously they're not paid the same as MPB players, but they're still playing the game at a high level. They have a system to play within. So, you know, coming into, especially the U.S., where, you know, the weather's great, I see the future of that is having, you know, maybe having university or college club teams. Maybe, you know, you might not get into NCAA right away, but that doesn't, but hockey, ice hockey has had a club team at Arizona State University for quite a few years, and now they've built a program, and they're starting to go into the NCAA world. So we've got to build some structure and a system, and the camps and these, you know, these exposure opportunities are awesome, but then we need somewhere for them to go after that.
Yeah, there've got to be some goals out there. And just like in Europe, if they have a pro league in Europe, now that gives them an opportunity to look forward to something else too. But, you know, it sounds like the women have, you know, great passion for the game. Now, I've been in the game 37 years, and I know the audience isn't going to like me saying this. You know, the game's boring, okay? It's slow. It's boring. Now, if we all know kids really well, you know, they want to move. They want to do things. You know, they end up coming to a game that's boring. They're not going to stay much longer. And I know we can get into coaching, how important that is. That's probably the most important factor. But the women don't have this issue. When they start playing the game, do you see them not being excited anymore because practice is boring, because the coaches maybe aren't as good? We definitely see it from the baseball side. I can give you a million options why kids are quitting the game. Mm-hmm. Everybody can give me the excuse of, you know, video games, all that. Those are excuses, because most of them are quitting when they do quit, because they don't like the coaches, they don't like the practices, and they're not having any fun. Do you guys see that in women's baseball?
I think it's a sport thing in general. Yes, it's baseball. For women's baseball, one of the challenges for us now, and particularly, is the fact that softball for women is back in the Olympics. So if those that don't know, you know, everybody's celebrating the fact that baseball's back in the Olympics, but it's really important to note that men's baseball's in the Olympics and women's softball, which, you know, that's a whole topic for another day in terms of gender equity. But for us in baseball, we're going to lose girls to softball. Not whether it's boring or not boring, but we're going to lose girls to softball until we can get back into the Olympics, or until we can have the proper pathways. We're looking in Australia at trying to have, whether it's professional or semi-professional league, but we're looking at that at the moment, to have a national league to give those girls that opportunity. But it's also, you know, we talked about the age group and the opportunity for development. But as the kids get older, whether it's boys, girls, and in any sport, there are so many other things that they can be doing. You know, they're playing Fortnite, and they're gaming, and, you know, they start getting interested in other things. All of a sudden, the parents are maybe too busy to be dropping them off, and At early age, they might have been playing three or four sports, and then they, at some point, they have to start specializing. So it is really important, and I'm not sure that there's any one answer to how we do it, but things like the WCBF, where you make sure that every time they go out there, they're having fun. You know, I look at our club baseball back home, and it's more adults, but you know, they're standing there throwing batting practice with six or seven guys standing in the field for a couple of hours, and no one's interested in doing that. So it's about making it short, sharp, interesting, and that's why WCBF is so good, because the kids do 25 minutes. On one hand, we say it's not very long as right. a coach, you know, yeah. you don't have very long.
Absolutely.
But, you know, the kids get it, and by the end of the week, you know, you can see that improvement from you. And Shari, you're saying the girls from the start to the finish, I still think there's just that opportunity. Just give them a lot, make it fun, give them the role models, and we can make it better.
And I guess one of the things I see, especially in North America, because I mean, I grew up in the softball world, and there's college scholarships
yes.
for softball.
Yes. Yeah.
And so, you know, a lot of girls growing up in baseball, including one that played on the Canadian national team and played against my son at the U18 elite level in Canada. She, you know, is like, well, why aren't you playing softball? Mm-hmm. So you're a good athlete, you're a good baseball player. So she actually took a college scholarship, and she just didn't like it, right? Like she had never really played softball before, but it's like, well, you're a good athlete, like, why don't you switch over? So we see that a lot, where girls are being told, well, you know, there's no place for you on the baseball team here, so why don't you just go to the softball team?
Yeah, and a lot of yeah. people don't realize that baseball and softball are actually different games.
Right.
You know, you're still on a diamond, you've got a bat and a ball, but there is so many differences in it, and I guess that comes down to the nuances. But particularly when I've been in America, you see two different aspects. In America, when you talk about that you're a baseball player, people are like, really? That's really cool, you play softball. Like, no, I'm a baseball player. And they're like, yeah, baseball, but it's really just softball.
Well, they might also think yeah. it's slow pitch as
yeah.
well.
Yeah. yeah. And then I go, no, you know, we play with a hard ball and we throw overarm. And then their eyes kind of light up. And I have had so many different reactions from, well, that's ridiculous because girls just shouldn't play baseball, to, oh, that's really cool, you know, girls playing baseball. So it's a little bit of opening eyes. And, you know, in America, like, people is like, well, baseball's for men and softball's for women. In Australia, people actually don't see it that much, so they kind of just think it's the same game. So even though people will say, oh, blah, 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 yeah, you play baseball, I meet them 3 months later and they go, how's your softball going? And it's just like really hard to try not to roll my eyes and just...
yeah, and it's, you know, it's hard to change. I mean, because softball has been around a long time. Mm-hmm. They see that.
But
a
can I
bit.
Just add into that? Like, why does everybody think that softball, where there's the ball is bigger?
Right.
Why do they think that softball would be good for, is better for girls when the ball is so hard to hold,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Never understood that.
What about, you know, we talk about goals, you know, things to reach for. I mean, you know, most players aren't going to play the game that much longer. Some might get to professional baseball. You know, let's hope that there's a women's professional league that'll help, you know, get women to play baseball. But we're not talking, they could all, we're also seeing some women playing professional baseball with men. The other thing we're seeing is we're seeing a lot of women getting into scouting, executive positions. That's a goal, mm-hmm. because as soon as you can see there's an opportunity after you finish playing, that keeps in the game longer too, to see how long I can play, because then when I'm done playing, there's something else that I can do. So what do you see when it comes to that? I mean, I'm seeing some scouts, I'm seeing umpires that are women. It's gotta be good for the game.
Oh, absolutely. You know, not baseball fan, baseball's viewership isn't just men.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right, there's a lot of women that go to baseball games
yeah.
too, right? And a lot of young girls that go to baseball games too. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know,
yeah,
really.
Sure, the numbers will show 50-50.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it does. I'm
pretty
sure I read that the other day.
So truly, if you're taking care of, I always talk to people from a business when I'm doing business consulting, is who are your customers? And if your staff doesn't look like your customer, your viewership,
mm-hmm.
then you're probably not taking care of all your customers.
That's a really good point.
So, you know, because having that broad and and I'm not always, you know, I know the word diversity means a lot of things to to people, but having that diversity in how people think and what they look like, and, you know, that then somebody's seen that person, and I'm like, okay, I'm a baseball fan, and I see that there's somebody that looks like me, talks like me, thinks like me, you know, and maybe they're going to create a program that works for me, mm-hmm. right? So it's just, it's that being able to tap into to your customer base, you know. So it's the same thing with MLB, being able to have that diversity at Major League Baseball or in World Baseball Softball Confederation, as we're starting to see as well. You know, really, it shows that we're a global sport, and that we start to understand better what our different countries need and different people are looking for.
Well, you know, the other thing, you know, I think people need to remember, I know my wife, she pays the bills. She, you know, she makes a lot of decisions. So when it comes to baseball, you know, if you're going to go to a baseball game, the women make decisions on what you're spending money on too. I know they get together with their husbands too, but I see women from that perspective too. They're decision makers. So if they're already attending games, the more they enjoy the games, the more women you can get to go, the viewership obviously goes up. But then the other part, all the seminars that I've held in the U.S. especially, but I tell it all over the world, I really think more women need to get into coaching, especially at the younger levels, because I believe that you have to have better coaches at the younger levels.
Yeah.
High school, college, you know, they're going to get there and do their thing. But if you can't get them at the younger levels with good coaching, well, we know. And again, guys, you know, send me the emails and we'll talk about it. You know, you're going to say, well, you're bashing guys on this show. Well, you know, I work with guys, okay? I work with coaches. I know we're changing, but we're also tough on kids a lot of times, especially the dads that are volunteers can be really tough. And every time I've had women that are coaching in baseball, they seem to be a little bit more sympathetic. They don't let them get away with things, but they're a little bit more sympathetic because they understand that these are young kids, that they've got to learn and they got to have fun doing playing the game. That doesn't mean they didn't get away with things, because the moms ain't going to let you get away with it either. So I believe we need to get women in coaching more at the young levels. What's going on with that? What's happening? Is there anything going on in your countries to get women to coach more?
Well, we just ran over the last 3-4 years a program called Diamonds in the Rough, which is a girls' empowerment program that we ran in Indonesia. And one of the things we did with that was that we took emerging Australian national team members and current national team members, and we took them over there and put them in leadership and coaching roles. And a lot of these girls had never coached before. So we put them in a foreign country, foreign environment, foreign food, it's hot, and we got them in there teaching and coaching. And a lot of them have now come back out of that program, and they're back in their respective states, and they're doing a lot more coaching. Those that were already coaching now actually have coaching accreditation. So while we were there, we got them on the ground doing the skills, and they earned their coaching accreditation. So that's one of the things I probably have seen, that over the years, you know, women in Australia have been playing baseball since 1995, but we've not really engaged into that coaching aspect. And a lot of women, when they finish playing, they don't go into coaching. So we are really trying to emphasize that and work on it now. But it's also a little bit of changing that culture again, that the mum is not the scorer. You know, it's just not automatic that the mum becomes a scorer. And again, Shara was talking about, you know, sometimes women don't want to push themselves forward, and it's easier, and it's a lot easier. And I'm still guilty of it. Just go, hey, you know, look for the dad. You know, can you come and do that?
Right.
But, you know, why not look for the mum? And she's just standing there going, well, I don't know anything about baseball. Well, let's teach her about baseball. We teach her, you know, the dad probably doesn't know anything about baseball, but.
I can point a lot of dads that have been around.
But there, you know, there's a confidence factor there that the dad's going to go, well, you know, I'm a man, so I'm going to go and teach my son how to play baseball. But the mum's like, well, you know, I don't really know anything about this, so I'd like to learn first.
Sure.
And then I'll go out and
coach. Be an assistant to start with.
Yeah.
Like any young coach would
do. Yeah, and doing coaching clinics, like the stuff you do, you know, Pete, you teach people how to coach. And that's really important, is teaching people how to coach, because managing a group of 8, 10, 12-year-old kids, it's not necessarily easy. So it's giving, again, it's giving them the opportunities and giving them the space to do it, so that in a safe environment, you know, potentially, and we've done this a few times where we've run female-only coaching programs. So giving them space, comfort, and an environment and the skills that they need, and they're going to step up.
Yeah, and I, you know, it's really interesting because I see the what MLB and USA Baseball are doing, and so we have national team players from US and Canada actually going and instructing mm-hmm. at some of those events. Some of them are getting first-time exposure. Well, now we have Team USA, Baseball USA just announced their women's national team manager, one of their Veronica Alvarez, mm-hmm. one of their
absolutely.
You know longtime veterans,
yeah.
Because she started to get an opportunity to coach, and mm-hmm. she actually went in with the Oakland A's, right, and
yep.
did some coaching with them. So you know, it's that opportunity, and again, it's like anything else; they have to have the opportunity to take the women that have played the game at a high level, and then getting them into coaching. One of the things that you do, and we always believed in as well, is when we're coaching clinics with kids, we should be coaching the coaches and we should be coaching the parents as well.
Absolutely.
And if we can get more of that education and learn training as their children are developing, as their kids are developing, then we might get more involvement and getting them involved, getting them on the field, having them. So the great thing at the WCBF is we have chaperones that are male and female.
Yep.
From different countries. And in my station, they're all involved, mm-hmm. you know, so, and I try to teach them a little more about the why. The kids at this age don't necessarily, they might not understand it, but teaching them the skill and why we're teaching the skill the way we are, because they're the ones that can go back and take those skills back. And they're the ones that can get excited. So we know the chaperone from Ghana is just like, mm-hmm. she's just so
yes.
excited. She
yes.
wants to build baseball. So, you know, we can have some builders. You know, mm-hmm. and I guess I've been very fortunate working that first Women's World Cup in 2004. And now, you know, I'm going to be working my second U18 World Cup in Korea in a month. And I get to work. We have two of our female technical commissioners working in the Premier 12. So the first round of the Premier 12 this year, Olympic qualifier.
That's
year.
Huge.
So,
yeah.
So, you know, we're starting to see those opportunities come in. But, you know, you have to have the opportunity. The door needs to be open. Keeping that door open, giving the access to develop and to use, and then to perform, mm-hmm. and then once you perform, then earning that. And
yeah.
we've both been very fortunate to be able to earn some of those next roles.
Yeah.
And if you're listening, we encourage you, get the women to come out to coach. I think a great example what Narelle also said was, you know, like anything else, and we've got volunteers that of all levels as far as ages too. You know, they don't volunteer because they don't know the game, they say. They don't think they know the game. Men, too, as mm-hmm. we said. But if you can get them to be assistants, they don't need to know the game because the head coach can kind of right. lay out the plan for them, teach them, and then they follow their lead a little bit. Yeah. And then as they get more comfortable, they start teaching. Now, you mentioned culture. You know, men fall into some culture issues, too. And I think this is going to help. I think it'll help women in this capacity. You know, and they're not, you know, some people aren't going to like me saying this either. You know, Major League Baseball for a long time has been a good old boys network when it comes to coaching.
Yeah.
You couldn't get, you know, fantastic college coaches to coach them in professional baseball. You couldn't get high school coaches. The old term came out all the time, and I hated hearing it all the time. And they said, well, if you haven't played in the big leagues, you can't coach mm-hmm. there. Well, let me tell you, folks, I've got some friends that coach in the big leagues that have never played in the big leagues that are a lot better than some guys that have played in the big
mm-hmm.
leagues, and vice versa.
Yeah.
So it really doesn't matter where you've played. It's what can you teach? Can you teach? How well can, you know, do you know the game?
Mm-hmm.
How well can you motivate players? You know, there's all kinds of factors. It's a psychology game. I've got a good friend of mine that's in the NHL, never even played professional hockey or high school or college. And yet he's an NHL coach and one of the best NHL coaches. There's guys that have won, and I'm sure there's women, there's guys that have won, you know, the Stanley Cup. There's one specific guy that I know, I don't even follow hockey, that won the Stanley Cup and never even skated. Doesn't even probably know how to skate. He doesn't have to know how to skate. So my point to this is those stereotypes and that culture has created, we can change that because now we're seeing young kids, young people in executive levels at Major League Baseball. So the change can happen. It just takes a little time. Yeah. So that's why I want to encourage women to get into coaching, because I think if kids see that, then now they got another opportunity. It's not, now they're scouting. There's other ways they can develop the game. I want to jump, and please, if there's anything you want to mention, but I want to jump almost, and we're getting close to the end of the show. If there's something that I missed at the end, I'm going to ask you, I say, look, is there something you wanted to mention in the show? This is your opportunity. Just mention it. If there's a question from it, I'll ask it. But I want to jump back a little bit because there's something I want to ask. You mentioned in development, you mentioned the arm strength. Arm strength is an issue not just in women, but also in men, because, guys are starting to throw harder at the major league level, but even at the young kids level, they're starting to throw a little bit harder, and hitters got to be able to catch up to that. You mentioned women have that issue where they're not throwing hard enough. What's some of the things that you're starting to do to get them to understand how to throw the ball harder? Is there programs that you have, or is there techniques? Is there something that you have that can get them that you're getting to help them a little bit? And it could be only 2-3 miles an hour. That's a lot.
Yeah. I think there's a few things. There's probably not the system yet but it comes down to, and now that we've got the technology as well of breaking down the Emeralds, the Australian Women's National Team's been lucky over the last few years to have a Japanese expert in biomechanics who will video them and break it all down and show them different actions and that sort of thing. And we've seen, minor improvements with that. But I still think, we've touched on it earlier, I think the biggest thing about arm strength is just getting them throwing more at a younger age.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's, and just getting more kids and, more girls, more boys throwing at a younger age, however they're doing it.
Sure.
I think that's
with good technique, with good coaching, right?
Yeah.
And then with opportunity to throw.
Yeah.
So if even women on the national teams, if they are playing on a men's team and only playing outfield, and they're not getting a chance to pitch, they're never going to develop that. And
or if you're just playing catch once a week or twice a week, that's not enough either.
Yeah,
and that's
what
it comes back to, the system and the program. So it just has to be more of it. I don't think we never necessarily have to do anything more special or different. I just think we have to do it more.
So the science that you're seeing out there, women are starting to use the science aspect of it to develop, whether it be throwing or whether it be any other skill.
Well, I think they have to, because in order to go to that next level, they need that, right? And so, some of the guys may not, it's working for me, it's good, right? But I think the women, because they want to go to that next level, they want to take their game to that next level. I mean, there's many men out there as well, same thing, right? We're seeing it in the game in general,
sure.
The sports science and the biomechanics starting to come in. And there are some things that we thought we were doing right that now we found out that we've really been detrimental to our athletes.
That's where science has really been good for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And, just some of the discussions, and I'm not on the Women's Baseball Commission at WBSC, but having run been involved in so many and then running the Women's World Cup last year, there's been discussions about how do we make the game faster? How do we have the pitching? Does the pitching mound need to change? We brought in the fences a little bit. Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you, Anna Kimbrell last year hit a ball she hit it out of the pro park onto the roof of the batting cage. Like she hit a pro home run,
mm-hmm.
right? So now we have there's less home runs, but we've got a lot of double.
Testing 1, 2, 3, testing. We're going to continue the next 5 minutes of the show.
Can we listen?
So now the women's game has less home runs for sure than the men's game, but we have lots of doubles and triples. So the question really remains, do we need to change the game or do we just need to let it develop and continue to progress?
Well, that's an interesting question because there are things that you guys have discussed, possibly changing the game. Major League Baseball is starting to change the game a little bit. So what are some of those things that maybe you guys think could help the game?
Well, again, it comes back to do we change the game or do we improve the players in the game? And we've talked about it already today, but it's more women playing the game. It's better coaching for the women. It's more women getting opportunities to play at a higher level. The more we play, the more we're involved, the more coaching we get, the better we're going to be. But at the same time, that doesn't discount the fact that maybe there are opportunities to change the mound size, change the length of the size of the diamond, the home run fence. And they're all things that we can start looking at all the metrics for and make some scientific decisions about.
And we were very fortunate to actually collect some of the baseline data at last year's Women's World Cup. So yeah. Hopefully some of that information can help the Women's Commission at WBSC to start to look at, you know, really apples to apples. Because it's great to say, let's make it a little faster, but right now we know that arm strength matches foot speed, and if you make a change, that could change as well. So we've got to be, I think whatever happens, we've got to be careful. Mm-hmm. We don't want to make it just for the sake of making a change to make a change. The top teams play the game really well right now. We need to develop more teams. We're now seeing teams like France, who just won the European qualifier. Mm-hmm. And you know what? You look at their promo video, and they've got a pretty strong group of athletes that they've brought in to play, and with some good coaching surrounding them. So if we can do that in more countries around the world, that, you know, that may take us to where we need to be anyway.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. We've got a couple more things we want to finish with. One is just a quick question, and then we're going to open it up to the young ladies here about anything that they wanted to discuss that we did not get a chance to discuss. So my question is this. We were on a bus ride today, and you mentioned some of the technology that is being used to track some of this stuff, like not Repsoto, but TrackMan or FlightScope. I believe we talked about FlightScope mm-hmm. today. That's all technology that can help us with some of these ideas, no?
Absolutely. And actually, last year at the Women's World Cup, we did have FlightScope. So a huge amount of data came out of that.
Have we found anything out yet, or are we still in that research?
It's still a little bit under wraps.
Yeah.
So we're looking at the moment. We're cleaning up the data, and we've got some people analyzing it. We've got some early comments that really can't say anything about just yet.
Sure.
But there'll be some stuff coming out of that.
But that's kind of cool because, you know, technology, we talked about it on the show quite a bit. We've had a lot of people on the show about technology, what it's doing, you know, for the game. So, you know, as long as we're all, you know, using it, I think there's some good things we can come out of it. One of the things that, you know, and I keep thinking of questions, another area that we discussed, you know, on our bus ride, and we see this in the game, even with the men's, is velocity. Now, I know we talked about it in the show, but I do want to ask this part because I was thinking about it. Everybody keeps talking about velocity. You know, we got to increase the velocity. But, you know, there's other ways to skin a cat, you know, as the old term is used. It's not just velocity, but also the difference in pitch miles per hour. You know, if you can't speed it up, you surely can't slow it down. So if your fastball is 80, but your changeup's, you know, 69 or 70, that's a big difference. Mm-hmm. So are some of those things in, you know, a coach is looking at that because we're always looking at speeding up things and, you know, how to throw harder, and we got all this, you know, technology to use. But, you know, we're never thinking that, you know, some countries don't have the time to spend on, you know, on trying to speed up the arm.
Yeah.
But can we use other things to do that with?
Well, accuracy is a huge factor. So because the arm strength's not there, we see a lot more in the women's game. We see a lot more lower strike ball ratios, lots more walks at the moment. So if we can't necessarily speed up the arms, at least we can strengthen them. And again, comes back to good coaching, good technique, so that they're throwing more strikes. So it makes it harder for the hitters, you know, moving the ball around. You know, the Japanese pitchers, they're amazing to watch the way they can move the ball. They keep the hitters off balance all the time.
Yep.
And yeah, you know, there's some of them that throw the ball pretty hard, but it's not their velocity that wins them games. It's
great
the
point.
Ability to locate the pitchers and keep the hitters off balance.
And that's something we talk about in the bus all the time, is about the Japanese game. Mm-hmm. We can learn so much from it.
Absolutely. You know, we've watched Japan now. I've seen them since 2004 on the women's side. Of course, when you see the men play, it's something special. I was at the 2009 World Baseball Classic, you know, the final, and them and Korea playing, those two teams on the field playing in that final at Dodger Stadium. Pretty amazing to see. They're just so good with their mechanics. They don't make any mistakes mechanically. They're so precise with everything they do, and they have great spirit as well that they bring to the game.
Yes. As a matter of fact, we're going to brag a little bit on the show today because we just had the great honor of going to dinner with the great, great Sada Araho, the home run champion in Japan, not only in Japan, but all over the world. One of the most modest people that you would meet. We get a chance to sit down, you know, have dinner with him. He gave a talk, and one of the things that he talked about was how important coaching is and how important it is to find coaches that can work with young players on the fundamentals, but, you know, maybe not be as tough as they might be sometimes in Japan, because in Japan they're pretty strict on their players, as we know. We've talked about that on the show. So we've had, you know, that was an outstanding dinner. All of us were there. And we are going to end the show with one final thing, and that is, what was something that you really wanted to discuss that maybe I didn't ask the, you know, the question about? And, you know, Sherry, I'll start off with you.
I guess for me, as a talent and performance consultant, really more on the corporate side, you know, performance is performance. People are people. We always have the human factor. So whether you're managing or leading somebody in a corporate office, or you're coaching an athlete, whether they're professional or young on the field, we have to coach the person. Mm-hmm. We have to work to the person, and getting those people to get results. I always say you got to grow them. You have to give them some grit. You need to elevate them and help them evolve. And then you need them to take the lead and to work as a team. So getting results, GET. So that's my corporate consulting. It works. It really works on both sides. And sometimes we learn a lot in the corporate side from sport as well, right?
And vice versa. Mm-hmm.
And vice versa.
Mm. I'll probably go with the fact that, Pete, your listening base is probably, you know, is a lot of people that have been around baseball a long time and maybe haven't been around women in the game, and may or may not think that it's still a case of men play baseball and women play softball. And so I guess I'd probably just put it out there and just ask people to be open their hearts and open their minds to women and girls playing, and just let them play. Give them the opportunities, encourage them. Don't send them away. Don't tell them they can't play. Just let the girls play.
Absolutely. All right. Those were great, great final comments on the show. So, folks, we are going to say good night from Fukushima, Japan. I am your host, Pete Caliendo. Special thank you to Brian Kroc, our producer with the Lineup Media Group, and Sherry Reiniger and Narelle Gastre with the WBSC, I should say, and also the World Children's Baseball Fair. Both of them have been coaching here for the last few days. We will be ending in a couple days. So, folks, hope you enjoyed the show. Want to thank you. Don't forget, email me at petercaliendo@AT&T.net. And check me out on Twitter @BaseballOut, along with our YouTube, which is Peter Caliendo. Again, have a great coaching day from Fukushima, Japan. Sayonara, and have a great coaching day.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.